There was a knock at the door, and it was my boyfriend with a fireman, just saying, you 5 minutes, get out. We grabbed a few cushions to put upstairs, and by the time I was coming down the stairs, I was in water, and that was it.
And how deep did the water go?
You can see it there on the wall. It's gone up. Our bed was covered. It took us a year to do the place up, and it took 20 minutes to destroy it. We've literally nothing.
Do you mind me asking, were you insured, or have you been talking to the insurance company?
Yeah, we are. They're sending a guy out in the next day or two, and he's going to assess it, so we can't really do much until they've had a look at it. Our fear was they'd say it was an act of God or something, but we're covered for floods and storms, so that's something. There's a lady down the end, she'd no cover at all, and her house, we couldn't even see it last night. You look at it and you say, well, that young policeman doing great work, and his poor family, and so that's just what we have to concentrate on, the positives now, and there's nothing else we can do, really.
We had 15 minutes to get out. My fridge freezer is lying on its side. Everything is down off the walls, my clothes, everything. It's gone, absolutely gone. I'm not happy about it. This is my third flooding in 30 years, and it's never been as bad as this.
But that's nothing compared to this morning 50 years ago when Hurricane Debbie struck. Our reporter Conor McMarrow spoke to the luckiest survivor of Ireland's deadliest storm.
There's a storm blowing up, a whopper.
Poor little kid, I hope she gets home all right.
The Wizard of Oz, where Dorothy, a young Judy Garland, was famously carried away from her farmhouse by a tornado. Today marks a poignant anniversary for Ireland's own Dorothy. It's exactly 50 years ago today since two-year-old Pauline Branigan, or Lachran as she was then known, was blown away from her grandparents' home in Pomeroy, County Tyrone, by Hurricane Debbie.
I was staying with my grandparents at age 2 years old, and it was windy. I was outside with my grandfather, and one minute I was there with him, and the next I wasn't. And I was missing for 24 hours. I have absolutely no recollection of what happened. Being only 2 years and 3 months old, I just going by what my mother and people tell me. I've been always aware of it. Neighbours and all would have said, oh, are you the wee girl that was blown away? I think I was about over half a mile from my grandparents.
Martin Sweeney of Strayed Climate Station in County Mayo has been recording the weather for over 50 years. And he remembers well the day Hurricane Debbie hit Ireland on September 16th, 1961.
It developed off the west coast of Africa. It curved around the Azores and then it headed straight for the west coast of Ireland. It was easily the worst storm that I remember in my lifetime. You wouldn't know what the next gust would do, whether it would take the roof off completely. Like. And looking outside, there was lots of things airborne, like hay up the village was flying through the air. And it was a frightful storm, really. And it was a day to be inside, if that was possible, like, because there were trees coming down everywhere. Like.
As Martin Sweeney watched Hurricane Debbie wreak havoc on Mayo, a massive search was launched in Tyrone for two-year-old Pauline.
All neighbours, 50 police of the time, firemen and all were out. My parents got their water from a very, very deep well. That was all sucked out to make sure that I wasn't in the bottom of that. Some trees were uprooted and had fallen back into place again. They were pulled out again to hoping that I wasn't in there. That went on from, as I say, Saturday morning until Sunday morning. People walked all night with torchlights. The next morning, being Sunday, there was a young lad from some fields away, I shall say, from my grandparents, and he was going to mass, and he thought he had heard like a wee whinge or a wee cry or something, but being in the middle of the country, you wouldn't expect it to be a child. So he went on, went to mass with a neighbour man, and the priest had was giving out that mass would be very short this morning because this child was missing and everybody had to go out and search. The young lad pushed the neighbour and said, you know, I think I might have heard something. They went down to where the lad thought he had heard this noise, and after some searching, they found me. It seems I was face down and asleep.
Pauline really was the lucky one, as 16 people, including 4 members of one family in County Cavan, were killed by Hurricane Debbie. A week after losing his Dáil seat, Sean Connick, a former Fianna Fáil TD for Wexford, was back on the campaign trail for the Shannon elections. Despite being one of party leader Micheál Martin's preferred choices for a Shannon seat, the former junior minister lost out again.
You know, initially it was the adjustment of the shock to the system of losing the seat, the quiet phone, you know, going from 100 phone calls a day to literally nothing. And I mean nothing. There were days within a number of weeks of losing the seat where I would ring a family member just to check my phone was still working. I mean, it was an incredible change pace of life. And then I suppose the Senate campaign was helpful for me, but then after that you were on a downer again because you were in a situation where, you know, you knew now that there was no, I suppose, political backup, like in terms of, you know, you didn't have a county council seat to go back to. I wasn't in a position where I could stay involved politically. So I found myself back in a situation where I needed to get an income, so I started to apply for jobs.
Like thousands of people across the country, Sean found the battle to get back into the labour market remarkably difficult.
I applied for numerous jobs, unsuccessful. In actual fact, to date, I haven't been successful in even getting an interview.
Now, Conor, the latest information on how much the Mahon Tribunal has cost the taxpayer to date, you've been digging out some figures.
Yes, there was a report from the Controller and Auditor General some time ago which estimated the total costs would be in the region of 220 million euro. And I've got the latest figures from the Department of the Environment that show that the total cost of fees for barristers and solicitors paid for by the state at the tribunal. They show that the legal fees bill has now reached 49.75 million. The department's breakdown also shows that there are now 17 barristers and solicitors who've earned over 1 million euro for their work at the tribunal. Four barristers who are or were counsel for the tribunal have earned more than 20 million, inclusive of VAT between them, and one solicitor has earned over 2 million euro. Founded in 1898, the Colwick Choral Society perform Handel's Messiah for charity at Christmas and Easter every year. Journalist and broadcaster Olivia O'Leary is part of Colwick, which is one of the country's best known amateur choirs.
I adore the piece, you know, and the more you sing it, you know, you find different bits, but it starts with that beautiful, beautiful aria, Comfort Ye My People. You know, it's an exquisite piece, tenor piece. And it ends, and this is my favourite bit, with the choir singing this long amen. It's a fugue with the parts rolling in over one another, one over the other. It's really like waves coming in, hitting the shore, and it brings the whole thing like a great big tide in at the end, and you feel beached after it, actually. I mean, it's such an emotional piece to sing.
As the Colwick Choral Society prepared for tonight's performance in St Patrick's Cathedral, the renowned journalist was particularly enthused about the historic venue.
The lovely thing about doing it in this church, which is a 13th century historic church, is that the thing is a prayer from beginning to end, so it actually suits a church very well rather than the more commercial atmosphere maybe of a concert hall. And to be doing it in Dean Swift's Cathedral, to be doing Handel in Dean Swift's Cathedral, less than a mile away of course from where it was first performed in the 18th century in Fishamble Street, you really feel history, you feel the old shivers down your spine in here.
Random start. Routers ready. Watch the gate.
The starting gate drops and the bikes speed off at the new Rathote BMX track. The craze, first made popular with Steven Spielberg's E.T. movie in the 1980s, is back with a vengeance. And Shay McNally, chairman of the local club, explains why.
There's a group of us that are kind of race BMX in the 80s and then got together, you know, through Facebook, like, and started chatting and said, it'd be great to get a bit of racing going back again, because it's been like 1988, I think, was the last race in Ireland. I mean, it was very, very popular between 83 to maybe 86, 87. It's kind of slowly died off. And since then, there's been nothing, no racing, even though it's been Olympic sport since 2008. There's absolutely nothing here for BMX, and it's a fantastic sport. I think it's the only sport where you can have, you know, 3-4-year-olds racing and their parents cheering them on, and the parents racing, getting up in the gate and having a race as well.
Eamon Weir contested in BMX races against Shay when the pair were teenagers. Now grown men, their love of the sport has not waned, and they've been instrumental in building the new track for their own children to use.
This track was built and starting last May. We finished it about November, and we've about 500 members now. This is the biggest cycling club of any kind in the whole country, and we're only open 6 months or so. It's in the Olympics now, and it's a fully fledged medal sport. I mean, this is, you know, adrenaline fueled sport that kids are mad for. I mean, this is a kind of windy, miserable sort of day here, and the place is just open and there's 70 kids here.
Rathote's new Field of Dreams has involved an immense community effort, and it has remarkably been built without any grant aid in the midst of the recession.
Our reporter Conor McMorrow has been finding out if participation in a major football tournament can lift the spirits of the nation.
How it rose, three pigeons sandwiches for Stuttgart we began. Jocks are packed as German phrasebook and jump leads for the van.
There was a group called Top Deck Travel, and they had old London double-decker buses, which were custom-built. You had bunk beds upstairs, downstairs you had cookers, but we thought this would be perfect, and they met us at Le Havre, and it was great value. I think it was £295, and that was for food, beer, tickets for the matches, insurance, and accommodation for 2 weeks. 22 lads from Roscommon and Sligo and around the country, we had great fun.
Roscommon's South Leitrim TD, Frank Feehan, was part of the original Green Army that travelled to the European Championships in Germany in 1988. That's when Ray Houghton famously scored in Ireland's 1-0 win over England.
Surrounded by two white shirts, Galvin gets the ball, looking for Aldridge. England defence in a mess, John Aldridge going for the high ball, trying to knock it down for Houghton. Goal!
It was the first time Ireland qualified for a major tournament, and Frank recalls how the event caught the imagination of a nation.
I suppose it was a huge innocence. It really didn't connect with the Irish public. I remember stopping at Carlow on the way down to Rosslare, and, you know, we had the colours on and people were asking us what's happening and we're going to Europe, and it hadn't connected. And it was amazing, I think, once the fact we beat England 1-0 and Ray Houghton put the goal and ball in the net. When we were coming home 2 weeks later, there was a civic reception back in our own town, so the whole country had essentially changed, and we really never connected how important the England match was until we read the Irish Independent, I think on the Tuesday we got the Independent in Frankfurt, and it more or less stated this was history.
Somebody tell me a colour. Okay, so HTML and CSS and a lot of these languages were created by Americans, so your English teachers are going to hate me, but we use American spelling. So colour isn't spelled with a U, it's spelled just C-O-L-O-R.
That was Coder Dojo founder James Welton speaking to Ireland's next generation of computer programmers. Less than 6 months old, it has already garnered coverage in the technology pages of the Wall Street Journal, and the young Corkman has even walked the corridors of global giants Facebook and Google.
Coder Dojo is a network of free computer clubs for kids. It's a place where kids come every Saturday and they learn how to code and do web applications and create websites and make iPhone apps and such, and we do it all for free. So we've got six at the moment, five in Ireland and one in the UK, and we have over 150 kids who learn to do this every Saturday and about 50 plus mentors who volunteer to help them out. I finished my own Leaving Cert in June, and I started doing websites and coding about 9 years old. I was always really frustrated that I came from a family of dentists and they had no idea where they got me from. But anytime I had an issue or wanted to know something, there was nobody there to show me. And growing up, I found that there are more people like myself. So eventually I started a computer club in my own school. I had about 30 people who we did the basics of coding twice a week, and I had people from other schools contacting me. So I started the first Coder Dojo in Cork with Bill Liao, who's my co-founder in this, and we found that we were getting requests from all over the country and indeed the world. It's essentially to tackle like the poor state of technology and education at the moment. There's so many job vacancies in technology in Ireland at the moment, at least over 10,000. So it's to kind of tackle those two areas.
Coder Dojo was set up to attempt to fill a learning vacuum left by the conventional education system. Starting with 10-year-old Ruth, I asked some of the participants what Coder Dojo meant to them.
I thought it was really fun to learn more about computers and like HTML and CSS.
Hi, my name's Shane, I'm 11, and I got to Coder Dojo to help young kids learn to code. I've been programming myself since I was about 7.
I'm Alicia and I'm 11, and I think Coder Dojo is really good because you can have a feature if you do it, because you can have a web page, and I have a web page already, and I do book reviews and I get publicized so that I have a feature and I can use my website as my feature.
My name is Karen Power, I'm 28 years old. To be able to be in a room with that enthusiasm just really brings home the importance of such an initiative. I can see it taking off worldwide.
The government intends to put a question to the people, of course, later this year, at least that's the intention at the moment, about the very future of the Upper House. Our reporter Conor McMorrow has been finding out about the Shannon referendum.
Darling, you got to let me know. Should I stay or should I go?
And I am asking you to request that Minister Rory Quinn comes into this house.
There are lies, there are damn lies, and there are statistics.
I don't want the political kudos of having this bill in my name.
Israel has every right to exist within democratic and viable borders.
Do they want the same amount of frontline staff on less pay or less frontline staff on the same pay?
It was a very progressive Senate from 2002 to 2007.
And that we can present those bullet points to the relevant ministers. That is a way, I think, that we can show that this House is meaningful.
Some of last week's action from the order of business in the Seanad. But 2012 could be the year that marks the death knell for the upper house in the Oireachtas. Fergal Quinn has been a senator for 19 years, and he has been leading the charge to save the Seanad.
I believe it would be incorrect to abolish it, because it seems to me that placing all the responsibility onto the hands of Dáil deputies means every piece of legislation, every piece of concern, doesn't get a second look. And in my 19 years, I've discovered a serious number of times where pieces of legislation have gone through the Dáil, haven't been examined thoroughly, and we've discovered it in the Seanad.
After his first week in the place, Labour Senator John Whelan bluntly compared the Seanad to Ballymagash Town Council. But 8 months on, Whelan favours reform over abolition.
What I said was its future was as dead as a dodo if it continued to behave and organise itself in the fashion that it was over the past 15, 20 years. My first exposure was that we were elected for 5 weeks before we even had a first meeting. On our first day of sitting, we were called in and we elected the Cathaoirleach and the last Cathaoirleach, and then we adjourned for a further week. And I said, this can't carry on, and I wouldn't expect it to. And I said that the Senate deserved to be abolished if it behaved in that way. It just wouldn't wash in any other walk of life. But I do also believe there's a strong case to be made for the Senate. I believe that the Senate should be retained, but only if it's radically reformed. It cannot continue in its present format.
Laughter yoga, we hear, is erupting in Ireland. And our reporter Conor McMorrow has been trying to find out if laughter really is the best medicine.
Great to see such a big turnout. And tonight's session is a taster of laughter yoga.
Catherine O'Dea has a background as a bioenergy therapist, and she now runs Laughter Yoga Dublin. She explains how and why she has been trying to get people laughing.
It's a blend of kind of yogic breathing and unconditional laughter. That's laughter for no reason. And the laughter is fake initially, and then it becomes contagious in the group. And, you know, we play off each other, and the laughter just becomes bigger and louder and better. And as you laugh, you're breathing deeply and you're exhaling deeply, so you're increasing the levels of oxygen in the blood, so then the health benefits from that are huge.
So to get the energy going, we're going to start off with the clap. We're going to clap this way because we're stimulating energy points here on the hands by clapping like this. Okay, so
after the warm-up, the laughing begins when the group stir an imaginary milkshake with their hands and drink it to make themselves laugh.
Remember, fake it till you make it, okay? Yeah.
Then it's time for a short break from self-triggered laughter as the class go back to their childhoods.
Next thing we do, though, we have a wee break from the laughter. As well as laughing, we're cultivating our childlike playfulness, okay? So we're going to pretend we're penguins, okay? And we're all going to walk around with penguins around the room. Okay, off we go.
So what happens if you would like to sample laughter yoga, but you are afraid to laugh in front of a group of strangers?
I know some people will be a bit apprehensive going into a group of strangers and laughing, but really there's no need, because everybody is laughing the same way. Everybody is looking just as silly as you feel. So you laugh with people and you laugh at people, and that's grand. But if you really do feel like that, bring a friend, and then sometimes it's easier to get into it.